what satisfied our parents no longer satisfies us. This sensitive observer caught a glimpse of one of the great changes in human response which occasionally comes over our world. Until quite recently, until really this century, Oscar Wilde wrote some 40 years ago, the world was a rather steady, predictable place. Men took great pride in the past, heraldry and bloodlines and old institutions and venerable customs, and keeping up the old ways. The world didn't change very much. Oh, there was always a certain amount of new discovery, of new information, of certain new machines. But you could be pretty well certain that your lives were going to be rather like the lives of your parents, that you were going to live in the same class as your parents had lived in, with the same advantages and disadvantages, with the same attitudes and hopes and prejudices, and fears and superstitions and conventional wisdom. And then about the beginning of this century, 60, 70 years ago, the rate of change began to speed up. There was new information, new scientific discovery. This led to new machines. And more we began to change the environment which surrounds men. We moved faster. We communicated more speedily and more easily. We ceased to need men as pack animals, as beasts of burden. We created an economic climate in which your success depended upon your brain, your skills of mind, and rather than your skills of hand and your brawn and your sinew. And man began not so much to scan the past as he had once done, as to scan the horizon and look to the future. And little by little, we began to create what we call now the now generation, where you study science rather than history, where your lives, you know, will be very much different than your lives of your parents, where the environment into which you are growing up and maturing is changing around you day by day. We look to tomorrow rather than to yesterday. We're not sure exactly what that tomorrow will be like, but we are sure at least of this, that it will not be the comfortable, neat, familiar world in which we were born and in which we spend our early and formative years. And so, almost in defense, this now generation is creating a new vocabulary, a new beat to its music, new forms to its art. It's dressing in new styles, it's wearing new clothes, it's cutting its hair in a new way, or not cutting it at all. Briefly, we're living with an eye ahead rather than with our eyes behind. Now, I cite these facts not to describe your generation, you know it as well as I, but to suggest to you what this service can truly mean. Where we welcomed you this morning into a venerable place, you are taking part this morning in an ancient ritual, an ancient custom. Some of you spoke parts this morning which were spoken by your parents and your grandparents before you. We read this morning an old text, 10 statements which have not changed in 3,200 years since they were first given to Moses and Mount Sinai. And we read them out, not in slang, not in the idiom of the day, but in the old, glorious, holy language of our people. There is an element of the past, of the hoary, of the venerable, of the ancient, of the eternal to the service. Now, why do we bring you here? Why do we surround you here with this element of the past, with this element of tradition? You came this morning into this building wearing the clothes of the day, speaking the idiom of the day. Perhaps you had the car radio turned on to the music of the day. And here, suddenly, we bring you into the timeless and the eternal. For this reason, and this reason only, to remind you that change is not always progress. To remind you that all that change means is that the world will be a different place, not that it will be a better place. That for the world to be truly better, there must be discipline, control, human control. That great demands will be made upon you because of the changes in our world, and that you must be equal to these demands. I want to speak very briefly this morning to you of one of the greatest of our prophets, a man by the name of Jeremiah. Jeremiah was with it. He was hep. He did his thing. He was a peacenik. In a world in which, much like our world, there were rulers who were eager to explore other countries and to conquer other nations, Jeremiah took his placard and wrote on it, "Let Judea be concerned only with its own social problems, with righting the injustice, with giving opportunity to the poor. Let's not be involved in foreign adventures." And he sat down in the palace of the king, and he was brought to trial, and he was convicted and sentenced at one time to death. He was willing to stand up and to be counted. He was a young radical. I'm sure if in those days they wore their hair short, he wore his long. If everyone was dressed in suits and ties, he wore a jacket of a different cut. He was very much with it, very much like many of the young people whom you have been reading about and whom you will soon join. But Jeremiah said something which is very interesting. This young radical, this young rebel. "Stand ye in the way and see which is the good way. It is the old way, and walk therein. For therein shalt thou find peace of mind." The good way is the old way. What did he mean? He meant, I believe, this. The world is always a place of possibility. There is always opportunity. It depends upon whether man has the courage and the vision and the determination and the willingness to sacrifice, to take that opportunity and to make it stable, to root it solidly in the ground. Now, there's an ancient wisdom, and it hasn't changed these many years. It has to do with truth and integrity and character, with loyalty to family, with concern for one's community, with the willing to set principle over privilege, the right over prejudice. It has to do with establishing justice and righteousness in the community, and seeking freedom for all men. And these are not new words, they're very old words. It has to do with thou shalt and thou shalt not. And these are not old new duties, these are very old duties. They're as old as the great commandments which we read out this morning. The world may change, but the demands, the duties required, do not change. Your world will be very different from the world of your parents and your grandparents. None of us can truly describe it. But unless you are willing to take yourselves in hand, to seek more than your personal advantage, to be a member of a family and to give it stability and love, to be involved in your community and to seek the general good, as well as your personal profit, unless you are willing to sacrifice for the larger justice and the broader peace, I am afraid that all of the change, the technological advance, the scientific research may add up only to misery and despair and bloodshed. For what profit have we if we heal the body but destroy the soul? If we desalinate the seas in order to harvest them, but have fresh water to pour only on a land which has already been contaminated with fallout? What profit is there if we have more people and more money, but we cannot create in our cities a pleasant environment in which man can find
privacy and graciousness and quiet, as well as an opportunity to be welcomed into the society of other men. Now, there are some who despair of this age, who see only the birth pangs, who see only the tensions, the riots, the restlessness, the roiling. And there's a great deal of it, as you well know. I do not. The tradition does not. For the first time in human history, we have the capacity to divide up enough for all men. Economics was once called the dismal science. Why? Because it was always a question of how you divide insufficiency, inadequacy, not enough. There is enough. There's enough to give all men opportunity, the opportunity to learn and to advance himself. We know the techniques of schooling and of education. We have created a society in which men need not be beasts of burden to be men. It's a great world in which we live, but a very dangerous place also. We have weapons of destruction which defy description. We can keep men alive, but we cannot always increase their food supply. Half a continent in Asia teeters on the brink of mass starvation. It's a great age, an age which makes great demands upon us. Our messianic tradition always spoke of the inauguration of a great age as the Hevlei HaMashiach, the birth pangs of the Messiah. They knew that there would be always a great deal of thrashing about when man changed one familial set of customs for another, when men gave up the familiar and had to strike out into new opportunity. I think we're going through such an age. You're going to grow into maturity in such an age. And in such an age, when there are many false prophets and many false philosophies, in such an age when no man is sure exactly what is required of him or of her, in such an age it's good to hold fast to the ancient wisdom, to the eternal verities, to the thou shalts and the thou shalt nots. For whatever be the way that you take, whatever be the opportunities that are yours, if you maintain your integrity, if you are concerned always for the larger good, if you are sensitive to the needs and to the feelings of others, if you respect the truth from whatever source, if you have respect for your fellow men, whatever be their creed or their background or their color, if you search for God and the good, your way will be a satisfying one, one which will bring credit to you, to your families, to our people, to all mankind. Stand ye in the ways and see which is the good way. It is the old way, and walk therein, for therein shalt thou find peace of mind. Amen.